Hello, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, whatever time of day you're listening in. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is the first episode of my new podcast called Later Days. I am a huge, huge fan of the film and the gaming industry. And for me, I could just talk about that all day long. So I thought, why not make a podcast about it? These episodes are really going to be short. They're going to be sweet. They're going to be full of, you know, lighthearted stuff. It's going to be a lot of fun. I plan on posting around twice a week, preferably Mondays and Fridays. They're going to be around 10 minutes or less. When I have a special guest come on, then the episodes will be longer than 10 minutes, but you'll know that ahead of time. You know, really, this is a great way for me to kind of share my opinions on what's going on with the film and the gaming industries. I'll be sharing some of my ideas on several themes that I feel like are prevalent in these particular industries, as well as some recommendations for the types of movies and the games that you guys should try. And, you know, if you guys have any feedback or any suggestions that you have, I'm more than happy to take them and incorporate them into future episodes. So without further ado, let's dive right in. So for the first episode, I decided that I want to talk about nostalgia. Nostalgia and the feelings of comfort that I feel like it gives us as moviegoers, as video gamers, or just as people in general. I've just been noticing that recently nostalgia has been kicking in really, really hard, whether it is the clothing, flip phones that I see from time to time, the content that we consume in general has begun leaning or has been leaning into things that we cherish as a child. For me in particular, with films, I used to really like, you know, reading like the Batman comics, you know, Justice League of America, those kind of lighthearted with, I guess, a degree of maturity when it came to certain plots and characters. But overall, the comics themselves and the content and the games that I played were just lighthearted stuff, you know? I feel like as we grow older and as the movie industry and the gaming industry, they've matured and grown older, we began leaning into like more mature, more darker, more, you know, gray areas as consumers. And while I'm a huge fan of films like, you know, Jason, you know, the Bourne trilogy, the John Wick franchise, you know, the Batman from 2022 starring the ever impeccable Robert Pattinson, I'm a huge fan of those films and games and characters. But I also want to, you know, I'm always curious about, what about the other side? What can we bring some lightheartedness into the movies and the games that we see nowadays? Can we actually, you know, bring that back without the characters very little to work with? Because, you know, with good people, with inherently good people, it's very, sometimes it can be difficult to give them a character arc without, you know, and, you know, introducing some darkness or whatnot, right? And that is where nostalgia does the work for us, right? So for example, the movie that just came out, Freakier Friday, starring Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan, the sequel to the cult classic Freaky Friday. I have heard great things about the movie, and more importantly, audiences have really liked the fact that it was able to take nostalgia, right? So for the first installment of the franchise, and it was able to incorporate some modern themes with it, right? So in the first movie, we see Lindsay Lohan and Jamie Lee Curtis, right, their mother and daughter. With this new movie, I mean, no spoilers, obviously, if you've seen the trailer, you know, you've seen the trailer. It seems to me that Lindsay Lohan's daughter and another character, they get enveloped. So all four of them switch bodies with one another, which is pretty cool, right? So you take that fresh premise and you give it just enough creativity that you have the people on board from the original, as well as getting more casual viewers to watch the movie as well. And it's really tricky to do, right? You know, you find that a lot of superhero franchises recently have attempted to do the same thing with, I would say, a pretty high percentage of success, you know, both in box office revenue and critical reception, right? So you have Superman from DC Studios, and it's actually the first movie in the new phase of DC Studios. I think it's called Chapter One, Gods and Monsters, headed up by Peter Safran and James Gunn. Then you also have Fantastic Four, First Steps from Marvel Studios. And admittedly, both films, their respective franchises, so the DC Universe and then the MCU, Marvel Cinematic Universe, they've had their fair share of missteps and, you know, a couple of mistakes that have been made. You know, audiences have loved films, but then the films don't do well at the box office, or people hate the films and then the films don't do well at the box office. So it's very lose-lose, win-lose kind of scenarios. But, you know, it's very hard to work with those scenarios when you're dealing with $200 million budgets and post-COVID woes, right? So, personally, I found, and a lot of people seem to agree, that these two particular films, they leaned more into nostalgia and lightheartedness than before. With Superman, we don't see a grim, we don't see a conflicted, well, we do see a conflicted character, but we don't see like a grim, overly dark, depressing world that surrounds him. We see him in a colorful city where he is, bright blue, bright red, and he has conflicts that normal good people would have. It's very hard to describe, but with him, he's like, he believes so well in his purpose that he knows that what he's doing is right, but he is at conflict with himself. Like, what is his true purpose? And I think the film does a really good job of giving him a grounded story while also maintaining that lightheartedness and, the throwback to like, films of the 2000s where things were not quite as, I would say, grim in the superhero universe, is my personal opinion. With Fantastic Four, right? You have Marvel's first family, right? So you have definitely a lot of expectation. I think with Marvel more than DC, I would say, because Marvel in particular has seen as, kind of fallen since the years of Endgame back in 2019. So really with them, and I've noticed these theories online too, I think it's a really cool theory. It seems like Marvel is hearkening back to like their phase one film. So they're trying to focus on characters. They're not really trying to push the multiverse narrative. They're just focusing on humans and superheroes and what makes superheroes tick. And with Fantastic Four, you see very human characters. You see the heroes portrayed almost like as if they're normal humans, right? You have, the Invisible Woman. She's portrayed, they incorporate a lot of her motherly aspects in the character, which I thought was very interesting. With Mr. Fantastic, you have, of course, him playing, a father. You have him playing a more academic tone or a more, scientific tone, which is more in line with his character from the comics. Johnny Storm is also, more freewheeling, more, happy-go-lucky kind of thing, but still willing to work, obviously. And then you have the Thing, right? The Thing is very kind of resolute in what he does, and I think the way that the four of them and Superman in their respective movies, the way that they've been portrayed has been really cool, and it's been really, I think, grounded is the right word. And it has done so with a bright, with a very colorful, with a very nostalgic approach. With stories that both will satisfy people who have watched or have read these comics or researched these characters for a long time, as well as people who are just casually trying to watch a movie, right? Because you're trying to, again, appease both audiences. And it's very difficult to appease both audiences, especially when you're wielding the nostalgic sword. Over in the gaming industry, we have a new entry of a long-running franchise, Battlefield. Battlefield for the uninitiated is a large-scale FPS first-person shooter set in war times across different time periods in history. And recently, Battlefield 6, which is the 18th installment of the franchise, is set in modern-day times and follows a world at conflict not so dissimilar to the one that we live in today. And more importantly, this is the first game since 2011's Battlefield 3 and 2014's Battlefield 4 to actually take place in modern times. And the reason why this is so important is because recently, since Battlefield 4, Battlefield 1, and Hardline, entries in the Battlefield franchise have faced increasing scrutinization from players. Decisions that EA has made have not been well received. Whether it is the time periods in which the game is set or the way that the games themselves are being handled post-launch. And we're living in a time where game prices are also increasing, right? So games used to be $60 back in the 2010s, and now they're $70, and $10 is $10, no matter what you say or no matter how you frame it. With this particular entry, you have nostalgia, again, being wielded by Electronic Arts, EA, the developers, but it's a double-edged sword. Right, so on one hand, you have people who are like enjoying the beta. Over 500,000 people played the beta this weekend. I myself put in 9 hours in one night, uninstalled it the next day because I was like, I'm not going to play this anymore. I can't. It's going to destroy my life. And then I'm probably going to install it again for week two of the beta this week. So that just goes to show how addicting it is, how great the game is. And you have a lot of people who are saying, oh, it's doing everything that Battlefield 3 and Battlefield 4 did right. This is exactly what we need. And then you have the other people, right? So you have the other section of the people who are like, well, okay, they seem to be using nostalgia, but can that actually translate into a game that we can enjoy? You know, will the launch go well? Will they have grounded skins? Will they have gameplay that is not broken? Will they have no cheaters? Will they have no bugs? You know, there are a lot of things to satisfy for customers, right? And you see this both in films and in games, right? People spend years working on this product and you have to make it work, right? So you're constantly trying to figure out, okay, what can I innovate? But then how much can I innovate, right? And that's where nostalgia kind of helps, right? It helps soften the blows, helps soften the work that needs to go into these games. But at the same time, it also makes the people work harder. You don't want people walking away from a title and saying, you know what? Wow, you know, they had a good run, but it looks like they're over. You know, those are the words that no company wants to hear. So, you know, as we see this game prep for its release, I think it's coming out October. And we have a second weekend of beta testing this week. You know, we're going to see a lot more content being released, a lot more players' opinions being shared. Let's see what happens. You know, can nostalgia in this case help this franchise? And can nostalgia help the Marvel franchise and the DC universe as well? You know, that's something that's going to be very interesting to see as the months and the years go on. But yeah, this is the one question I want to leave you with before I move on to recommendations. What role does nostalgia play in your everyday life? You know, when you go about, when you make your day-to-day decisions, when you choose what to scroll on Instagram feeds or TikTok trends or whatnot, you know, what do you prefer watching? Do you like watching new stuff all the time? Do you, you know, prefer to stay in the present, or do you like a little bit of nostalgia? Do you like, you know, putting on your rose-tinted glasses and a little, you know, everybody does it. It's quite common. You know, do you like to do that and, you know, view content that way? You know, I'll be very interested to hear what you guys have to say, actually. And feel free, of course, to send me the feedback. But yeah, as we wrap up the first episode, let's talk about recommendations. So this past weekend, I did a double feature, went to the theaters, watched Together and The Naked Gun. So two movies that are on very extreme parts of the scale, but I think two movies that you guys would enjoy. Together is directed by Michael Shanks. It is a primarily a horror film, and it stars real-life couple and producers Dave Franco and Allison Brie as a couple that is at their wit's end in their relationship. So they decide to move to rural suburban New York, and this is where shit gets wild. That's all I'm gonna say. You know, I think the film does a really good job of portraying relationships from a fresh perspective and really just how far partners are willing to go for one another, right? And as a currently single person, I just found a lot of amusement and I was very entertained by the film. Of course, the horror parts are horrific. I definitely shut my eyes a couple of times. And if you're a huge fan of dogs, if you're a huge lover of dogs, cover your eyes for the first 5 minutes of the film or 3 or 4 minutes of the film. Just a heads up, you know, don't say I didn't warn you. But with this film, I think if you're in a relationship and you take your partner to watch this movie, I think you'll have a lot of interesting conversations and maybe you guys will be able to relate to the films more with this particular movie. And yeah, overall, I thought it was really entertaining. Also was terrified at some moments, but yeah, very innovative, solid 3.5 out of 5. 4 out of 5, maybe. The second movie I watched, which is The Naked Gun, is the complete opposite of Together. It is a spoof film, and it continues the trend of the long-running franchise of Police Squad, which started with the TV show and a trilogy back in the 70s. This film stars Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson as respectively the son of the main character from the original films, and Pamela plays the sibling or the sister of the victim in this particular, that kicks off this particular mystery in the movie. And the movie is very, very funny. It's gag-a-minute. It's like a very tight 85 minutes. It does not waste any time pretending to be something it isn't. It uses nostalgia pretty well. I think it uses it in a very clever way while also grounding the characters in a modern time setting. And I think the way the film uses humor to, it's not a very deep movie as one would expect, but I think it's a great film that just is a good time. You turn your brain off, you go there, I watch it with the full, you know, audience, full theater. It was a great time. everybody was laughing at something, and you know, you get out of it and you have a smile on your face. So if you're looking for fun, if you're looking for fun for the whole family, watch The Naked Gun. I would say a solid 4 out of 5. Really good. And that about does it. Wow, we are over. We are probably going to reach like 15 minutes on this first episode, but you know, practice makes perfect, right? And looking forward to sharing more stuff with you guys. Thanks so much for listening and have a great rest of your day. Bye.